real crime is ignored, but then, oh, you said something about the progress flag in a pub, then you're going to jail.
They have effectively, for public health reasons, turned a harmless treat into a potentially toxic product.
People like that, you can tell whatever cause they're supporting, it's the wrong cause. Some people, you can just take a look at them and you just know.
Hello and welcome back to Last Orders, the Spiked podcast all about freedom and the nanny state. I'm Tom Slater, editor of Spiked, joined as I am in every episode by my co-host, Chris Snowden. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm all right, Tom. Thank you very much. One day closer to worms, as I say. Hello, listeners, and hello, viewers.
And happy St. Patrick's Day.
If we have got viewers.
Why are you going towards worms? What are you going to do with these worms?
Just feed them with my corpse.
Oh, cool.
And to those who might not have guessed, we are joined by a very special guest today, Leo Kurth. How are you doing, Leo?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Leo will be known to many people, of course, as a stand-up comedian, one of the presenters on GB News' headliners, and also you've got your own YouTube channel these days, Leo.
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel, so I put videos on there about 2 a week, looking at social and cultural issues, the rise of political Islam, stuff like that, cheery stuff.
There we go. So everyone should go and check that out and subscribe. There's plenty to talk about today, but I thought we'd start off with banter bouncers, one of the more almost hilariously miserablest things to come out of this Labour government so far. In the course of the past week, the Employment Rights Bill has passed through its third reading in the House of Commons, and buried within it, as some eagle-eyed people at the Free Speech Union and elsewhere discovered, was this new provision which would effectively incentivise places like pubs and venues to police their own patrons' speech. The idea being that you've got to protect your staff from harassment, but given the fact that employers, whenever it's anything revolving around speech, are likely to be very kind of heavy-handed, it seems like the only way they could possibly comply with this and avoid litigation would be to have policies saying you can't discuss certain things in my establishment, perhaps even make banter something that's under the purview of the bouncers. Leo, what do you make of this?
Well, it seems to be sort of putting something into legislation that's already happening socially. We've seen lots of cases of, it seems to be gender-critical women, TERFs, getting turfed out of pubs for wearing, for criticising the Pride flag or the Progress flag or whatever it is, you know, the one with all the chevrons, and or saying something critical about trans people. Because we haven't had a Labour government for that long, so this must have started under the Tories.
It sounds like this stuff did start under the Tories.
And then the Tories are all like, oh, this stuff is terrible. Why are you doing this? And it's like, because you started it. You're the shadow justice minister. Wherever it started when you were the actual justice minister.
No, I think this particular one is a piece of Labour legislation, but it's something that basically civil servants in various governments have been trying to sneak in for some time. So you're right to say that they have only suddenly discovered that this is a big problem.
Yeah.
Very late in the day. But Chris, what did you make of this when you heard about it?
As I understand it, this is the idea is that employers have to protect their employees from hateful speech or whatever in the workplace. And most people go, well, that sounds reasonable, and they should already be doing that. And what the Free Speech Union have done, quite rightly, is just to think of the kind of logical extension of that. Right? And I know people can say, oh, this is reducto absurdum, and you know, wouldn't end up like that. But in this day and age, you have to assume that any piece of legislation is going to be used in the worst possible way by the worst possible judges. Right? It always is. We've got this feral judiciary now that seem to overinterpret the law in most extraordinary ways, and there are countless examples of this with asylum seekers in particular. You can bet your bottom dollar that once this probably very badly written law is on the statute books, it will be used for exactly the kind of thing you're talking about. Mm-hmm. It might not be what the politicians were thinking of when they, you know, drafted it and voted for it, but it'll be used in that way. We have very, very badly worded legislation, well-meaning very often, but I think we have to assume that it will be used to police speech in any environment that people can think of. And you're obviously quite right that, you know, nervous employers will do what a lot of social media companies have done, and that is just goal play everything to keep themselves safe.
And it'll be completely two-tier. So we know it's only going to be applied to, like all other hate speech laws, all other speech crime laws, it'll be applied to a certain part of the population and not applied to another part of the population. If you've got the correct, you know, woke right on views, and there's a museum at the moment with a state-funded museum that's got an exhibit exhorting people to throw bricks at feminists, throw bricks at TERFs. And that's allowed to stay there, even though that's something that happens. So it's, you know, it sort of crosses the line into not just saying something, but, you know, inciting something that actually happens and giving it credibility and, you know, suggesting to the people who are throwing bricks at turf that actually you're on the right side of history. So
where's this? In a museum?
Museum of, like,
not even like an art gallery.
Museum of, it's a sort of display inside a museum, the museum of, like, gay stuff or something. Right. Like that.
But that's literally incitement to violence, which even quite strong defenders of free speech will go, yeah, that shouldn't be permitted.
Yeah, well, it's a sign of like trans stuff. So it's got, like, one of the things is a placard saying, you know, chuck bricks at TERFs or throw bricks at TERFs.
Yeah, that's incitement to violence.
And it's incitement to violence. And the thing is, like, I mean, if you look at the Southport, people convicted under Southport, after the Southport attacks, for sending tweets, a lot of them were convicted for quite sort of vaguely worded things. And a lot of them just took the conviction. They didn't plead not guilty. And the one guy who did plead not guilty was cleared in 17 minutes. So we can see that, you know, these laws, it's under communism, people, like, the government had laws that were so vaguely worded that they could be applied to anyone. So then the government could just pick and choose who they took out with them. So, you know, persecute dissidents with it, but also everybody lived under the fear of contravening these laws. So many people out there, every time they send a tweet or say something online, they'll be worried that they're contravening this law.
And the chilling effect is the point. I mean, it's the pressure that it puts on individuals, but also businesses to try and enforce this kind of stuff. And you're exactly right, Leo, about how this is kind of just formalising what has already existed. There is the example of the turf. So you just, you know, want to book a venue or want to just have a meeting in the back room of a pub is an increasingly difficult thing for them to do. There's been various kind of groups who are trying to set up lesbian dating nights, which are only lesbians are invited to. No penises allowed.
Yeah,
quite a traditional,
sounds reasonable.
Quite an outrageous perspective these days, which they've been hounded out of various different venues. This would just sort of formalise that. And then also, like, performers is another aspect to this, because what the legislation does is says that you've got to protect yourself against harassment from third parties.
Right.
But obviously that can include comedians. Jerry Sadowitz is a great example. He was cancelled at the Edinburgh Fringe at the Pleasance because members of staff took offence and then complained. So this would be an extra incentive to cancel comedians who, as you say, come from a particular political persuasion or upset certain people in society. It's just going to kind of fuel that, I guess.
Do you know what the exact wording is for this? Is this hateful speech, offensive speech, or what?
It's essentially harassment. So already in the Equality Act, employers are under a duty to protect against harassment as it relates to the protected characteristics, sex, gender, etc., race. But it only applies to within the organisation itself, amongst staff. What this wants to do is extend that to third parties, in effect. And to your point of, we've already seen the effect of it. Obviously, there's been so many cases that have ended up in employment tribunals and what have you, because employers have been very zealously policing their own employees' speech because someone's taken offence to what someone else does in their own time or what they've been posting on social media. So you already see how this would work in practice. It's just, it's got an extra absurd level because the fact that it would end up applying to pubs, places where people go and expect to be able to sound off. You know, it's the most kind of informal of public settings, and yet even there, that this sort of stuff could creep in. But I mean, should we really be surprised that this sort of thing has crept in, Leo? I mean, this is a government that is not only really censorious, but also, like, miserable. Like, some of the first thing they did when they got in was going after smoking and drinking and all the rest of it. So should we really be that shocked that this has happened?
No, not at all. But it's interesting that only, like, one in every 200 crimes results in a prosecution. So 99.5% of the time, people get away with the crime. So we don't have the resources to properly investigate and prosecute, convict people for committing crimes. But we're still bringing through laws that, you know, expand the number of people who can be committing crimes. So it's obvious that the law isn't there to sort of make the world a better place. It's almost another step towards anarcho-tyranny, where, you know, real crime is ignored, but then, oh, you said something about boobs, or you said something about the progress flag in a pub, then you're going to jail.
Just feel like that, but yeah.
Yeah, the hyper-regulation of, like, even the most minute of interactions.
While major
with people,
crimes go completely unaddressed.
It's absolutely crazy.
Added on to that, we've got some areas in the UK where the police don't even go in and apply the laws that we've got. They speak to community leaders, and the community leaders say, no, you can do that, yes, you can do that, kind of thing. So, you know, for them to be bringing through laws to sort of punish the sort of the reasonable majority, when there's areas of the UK where they don't even apply the laws that we've got, you know, the proper laws against, like, violence and sexual assault and all that sort of stuff, I think it's sickening.
I want to be a community leader. How does one go about becoming one?
Well, if you do
is
it,
there any kind of election?
If you, you apply, do it for the white people, then
you're a white supremacist. But if you do it for another ethnic group, then you're you're allowed to be.
Yeah, what community
leader
do you want to lead?
Whatever, whichever community will have me.
Fair enough.
I just want to be able to have a direct line to politicians and apparently make policy.
If there are any communities watching who would like Christopher to represent them on the national stage, he's open for applications.
Should we talk about serve.
Should we talk about the sugar tax, Chris? I know you've written something for The Spectator this week about the unintended consequences of the sugar tax. You want to tell us a little bit about
that? The law of unintended consequences, it's wonderful, isn't it? It happens all the time, and particularly with public health stuff. The best laid plans. So this is one really out of left field. I don't know if you guys like a slush puppy. I used to love a slush puppy when I was a kid. And it was a genuine treat because you couldn't get them in many places. You know, there's only like you go on holiday or something, you get a slush puppy, but you couldn't get them from a corner shop very often or anything. And probably in America, you can get them every few yards. But in Britain, it was a genuine treat. So straight away, you shouldn't have had the sugar tax on it in the first place because I don't think it's a major source of obesity, right? But they were lovely. And I have had one or two since the sugar tax and noticed they weren't very nice. Mm. But rather like Stella getting weaker and me going off Stella, I didn't make the connection.
Why did Stella
with government policy? Because the government started taxing beer more at 5% or more. Right. So everything's been watered down since. It's terrible. Right. Cronenberg's been watered down recently. It's dreadful. There's very few drinks left. That's why we're drinking. What we're drinking is the same as ever, far as I know.
And it's festive, of course.
And it's festive and St. Patrick's Day. So I noticed they weren't as nice as they used to be, but I thought maybe I'm just romanticising the past and actually I've just, you know, we haven't got as much of a sweet tooth. Anyway, it turns out that they did actually have quite a lot of sugar in them and now they don't. But they had sugar in them for two reasons. One, obviously, is to make them taste nice, but one was more practical reason, which is that the sugar raises the
melting point
or raises the melting point or lowers the freezing point, whichever way you want to look at it. So without the sugar in it, they would be solid blocks of ice. So in order to have the slush, you need to have the sugar, and you can't use artificial sweeteners because they don't have that same effect. But glycerol apparently does have that effect, so they started using glycerol instead, which I think is used in antifreeze, isn't it? Glycerol, I'm not sure. Doesn't sound massively healthy. I think it is in or some form of it is in vape juice, but so that seems to be all right.
Yeah, it is.
And glycerol, to be fair, even in drinks, is all right for most people. It's just you need to be a certain weight because otherwise you can have hypoglycemia, which obviously can be pretty nasty. And so a study came out last week in which they found, I think, 21 cases of kids under the age of 8 suffering from hypoglycemia and virtually passing out and having various nasty symptoms, none of which were fatal, thank God, but not very pleasant. And all of them had occurred after drinking a slushy ice drink. I won't name any particular brand names, but one of which obviously is Slush Puppy. And they noticed that all but one of these cases had occurred since 2018. They looked at, I think, started in 2009. But nearly all the cases were after 2018, which is when the sugar tax came in. And the authors themselves said this is the result, really, of the sugar tax. And so now public health people are going around trying to persuade parents not to give slushy ice drinks to kids under the age of 8, which they won't be able to do because not everyone pays a lot of attention to public health pronouncements. So I suspect eventually they'll just ban glycerol in soft drinks, which means that slush puppies will cease to exist effectively, which would be a shame because they used to be very nice. And the obvious solution is to exempt these drinks from the sugar tax, but they will never even think of doing that, or better still, get rid of the sugar tax altogether. But they have effectively, for public health reasons, turned a harmless treat into a potentially toxic product. And that's what we call unintended consequences.
I don't know if it's totally harmless though, because look at all the fat people.
Yeah, I don't think they're getting fat because of slush puppies. That's my
it's
point.
One, it's the people one of the don't. Things.
You think so, really?
Yeah, there's all this sugar and stuff in food. Actually, fizzy drinks are one of the worst things for your health. I know I'm saying that drinking a Guinness, but they're full of sugar and also the carbonated water. That's an acid. So that's like leaching your bones.
It's you're on the wrong podcast, early.
No, this is
it's an anti-nanny state podcast.
Man, I'm not saying it's right for the state to come in and say no, you're not allowed to drink that or whatever, but I also think we need to do something. Instead of teaching children how to be non-binary queer communists or whatever they do in schools now, why don't they teach kids how to make a nice glass of water? And just drink some water out the tap. We're in the UK. Like the water out the tap tastes fine. London water tastes fine.
Well, I'm not against people drinking tap water. I think kids do drink tap water, to be fair, and bottled water.
Yeah.
But since the sugar tax, there hasn't been any decline in child obesity. So it can't be.
Yeah, so imagine how much worse it would be.
If what?
If they didn't have the sugar tax.
I mean, it wouldn't be. Well, that's exactly what the public health people have said.
Yeah.
They said, like, we produced this study showing that the sugar tax works because, child obesity did go up, but it would have gone up even more if there hadn't been a sugar tax. Look at our modelling.
Well, they need to do what they did in Mexico, which is, so they introduced a sugar tax there, and the water in Mexico isn't, I don't know if anybody's been on holiday there and accidentally drank from the bathroom tap after a night of drinking, but it can give you the shits. So by having, I think we need to lower standards on our tap water, because if more people were getting diarrhea, they wouldn't put on as much weight.
They'd lose weight.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was the other study showing unintended consequences of the sugar tax, is that in Mexico, particularly in areas which don't have great drinking water, which is most of it, after the sugar tax came in, people did drink slightly fewer sugary drinks, but there was a 7% increase in gastrointestinal disease.
Yeah,
there you go. And this was the great model for George Osborne's sugar lady, wasn't it?
And
it was Mexico.
And Mexico remains the fattest country in the world, and obesity rates have gone up ever since the sugar tax came in.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, we've seen taxes like this, like the alcohol tax, minimum unit alcohol pricing in Scotland.
It's been a great success.
When I used to go up to Scotland, because obviously sometimes I go there, I'd be like, going to Tesco for a carryout, and I'd be like, whoa, how much is this? How can beer be costing more in Glasgow than it does in London? But the price of, because people can't go and get like a 2-litre bottle of cider and get blotto, they're instead turning to illegal drugs, and they're turning to pills, barbiturates, and you know, stuff that's worse for you. And also with a lot of the black market drugs at the moment, it's cut with who knows what?
People are dying. Drug taking will never catch on in Scotland.
And also with the
65p now, you know, the minimum price in Scotland.
And the other thing with putting artificial sweeteners and things, it actually tricks your body into thinking it's getting sugar, so you produce the enzymes and things to deal with sugar. Get the sugar, and then it actually makes your body, it screws your body's hormones even more than if you just had the sugar.
There we go.
Yeah, I've heard this, and I don't know if it's true or not, but it has the ring of truth to it.
Yeah.
And policymakers should just accept sometimes that things are as they are for a reason, and you shouldn't start prodding things unless you really understand what's going on.
But also, we've got multi-billion dollar industries just geared around tricking fat idiots into, you know, having as much sugar and eating as much of this or buying this product. So, you know, I think we do need to, like, we need to do something for the idiots. They're like cavemen who've been just dumped into this world where you've got these, like, big companies that have got laboratories where they literally work on the formula to find something that tricks your brain into thinking you just climbed a tree and picked a honeycomb. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think...
But why should we have to make sacrifices for the idiots?
Well, that's a nanny state. That's a nanny. We've got a nanny state trying to like sell this sugary stuff to the people.
Lord Bethel says.
The other side of the nanny state is trying to stop, you know, those people selling that stuff. I don't know, man. I mean, I wish everybody could be like smart and just drink tap water.
I don't care what they drink. I don't think it's anyone's business.
But I think
is good. We've got a debate on it. You know, it's taken 100 odd episodes, but we've finally got to all say.
Usually a complete echo chamber. Yeah. So this is much more positive.
I'm too used to complying with Ofcom and having to provide balance.
While we're talking about stopping people from doing things and the unintended consequences, Chris, should we talk about a bit of analysis that the IEA have got out about tobacco purchasing?
Yeah.
It seems to have plunged by,
45%
in the space of a few years. Do you want to tell us a bit more about this?
Since 2021, these are official figures. You can look them up. HMRC published something called the Tobacco Bulletin once a year, and it shows how much tax revenue they made from tobacco and how many sticks of cigarettes have been sold and how much rolling tobacco, cigars, and so on have been sold. Legally. That's the important caveat here, right? Because a lot of it is not being sold legally. But the legal sales of tobacco, whether it be manufactured cigarettes or hand rolling tobacco, they've fallen by a combined 45% in 3 years, right? this is obviously a sign that the black market has hugely expanded, right? The only way it couldn't be would be if smokers are suddenly smoking far fewer cigarettes per day, which they're not. We've got data on that. There's been no change in average daily cigarette consumption. Or if there had been a huge decline, yeah, you know, 45% decline in the number of smokers. But we haven't seen anything like that either. Depending on which figures you look at, it's either been less than 1% decline or maybe 10%. Either way, nowhere near 45%. So if we assume, hypothetically, that in 2021 there was no black market tobacco sold, which obviously there was a lot, then we've got about 40% of the market is already illicit. And given that there actually was some black market tobacco sold 3 years ago, it's enormous. And the government's got its head in the sand about this. The official estimates say that only 7% of manufactured cigarettes are non-duty paid, as they call them. This is just based on pure guesswork. Mm. The government makes no real attempt to find out the size of the black market because, frankly, they don't want to know. The anti-smoking campaigners don't want to know. They just want to believe that the problem is getting better and there's nothing to worry about. Whereas anyone who smokes or spends any time around smokers knows full well most of the packs you see on the ground or in people's hands have got foreign warnings on them. That's a giveaway. They haven't got plain packaging. That's another giveaway. The black market is enormous, and it clearly, this is pretty much as close to conclusive evidence as you can get that the black market is big, and it has been growing very, very quickly, primarily because we've had four massive tax rises in that period. You know, so I don't think it can be denied any longer that this is a major issue. The government is losing a lot of money from tobacco revenue, despite all those tax rises. A classic example of the Laffer curve. The government still doesn't seem interested.
And to be clear, this is we've seen this growth in the black market where essentially as a product of the kinds of, you know, tax rises on tobacco, like the generational smoking ban, which is going to be slowly
that'll improve
working
things,
through the age
group.
But that hasn't really been felt yet. So this is even before we actually get on to the escalator towards total prohibition, which is obviously going to put the
taxes will turn the whole market black before the prohibition does. I've been saying this for a while.
So then the prohibition won't have any effect. And in fact, it might even make smoking look more appealing because it's this sort of a renegade outlaw thing to do.
There is a bit of a vibe of that already, I think, with the Gen Zers. There is a bit of smoking sort of making a comeback, partly because they've been scared off vapes.
Right. Like
the large majority, well, of the country in general, think that vaping is as bad or worse for you than smoking, but particularly amongst actually the 16 to 24-year-olds. So
so they think like smoking is the healthier option?
They think, genuinely.
That's crazy.
They genuinely do. And I think there is a bit of this forbidden fruit element that's making a bit of a comeback with smoking.
Yeah.
So it's a public health disaster from start to finish.
And also a lot of the cigarettes that are sold in the black market are counterfeit. They're manufactured, so there's no quality control. Not that I'm saying, you know, tobacco companies have historically, you know, made sure that their cigarettes are, you know, really healthy.
No, but they could be worse.
Yeah,
and they are worse.
Market. Yeah.
No, it's absolutely, especially because when the generational smoking ban, when the Tories were first bringing it in, because like so many terrible Labour policies, the Tories wanted to do it first. Didn't they flat out deny that it wouldn't have, it wouldn't boost the black market and so on? Like, did they just completely got their heads in the sand on this?
Neil O'Brien, who was a public minister then, said that we're not going to do an impact assessment on the effect of prohibition on the black market.
It's too small a measure to worry about.
It's such a tail risk. Yeah, we don't think it's wasting our time looking at how the total eventual prohibition of a product might lead to some kind of increase in black market sales. And he said that every anti-smoking policy of the last 20 years has led to a decline in the black market, which is also nonsense.
Right.
And he's not an unintelligent man.
No.
O'Brien as well,
but he had to toe the party line. He had to toe the Department of Health line, and he did. Mm-hmm. And every one of his successors, I can't even remember who the latest public health minister is. It was Andrew Gwynn. You remember he got sacked from some.
Didn't he get replaced there's the MP who thought that people should be respected if they identified as a llama or something. I forget what her name was. Yeah, that was like the twist. That was the kind of punchline at the end of that Andrew Gwynn tale, was that who they replaced him with was even more nuts.
Amazing.
On the gender question.
Unless what a time to be alive.
Absolutely. Unless there's any more on smoking prohibition. Chris, shall we turn to Lucy Letby Corner?
Yeah.
Lucy Letby Corner.
So Chris, there's actually been some developments on the Lucy Letby front. Usually this is just where we harangue our guests for their opinions on Lucy Letby, but there's actually news. Do you want to tell us about what's been going on in Letby world?
I was going to show you some of these pictures. So Monday saw the Thirlwall inquiry, which is looking into the mismanagement of the hospital, really, which allowed her to kill children for so long. She resumed. It's finished really this week, but the pro-Letbius people, including her new lawyer, have appealed to her to suspend proceedings because we're not sure whether she's guilty or not. So
what are the proceedings at the moment? So this is the inquiry.
Yeah.
And what's the inquiry? Is it just looking at like what happened and who else was? Because we've already had the trial and she was found guilty.
Yes, two trials. And two trials? And two appeals, yeah.
What were the two trials?
She got retried for one of them.
Right.
And she obviously found guilty of that. Then there's two appeals. And at this stage, the only way she can be freed is if the Criminal Case Review Commission push the grants her appeal to the appeal court, which could happen. But I don't think it will do because there's not really much good evidence that she's actually innocent. Anyway, these characters turned up to protest. You can't see this.
We'll put them on screen while we stare at Chris's phone.
So a bunch of people who... A lot of OAPs there.
Straight out of Central Casting.
It's Monday morning, I suppose.
Yeah.
But they look like they're rejects from Extinction Rebellion.
They look like they could have been offed by Harold Shipman, and ironically.
Look at this.
And so this is one of their signs where Lucy Letby, they've actually made her look like...
Really
scary. This is a pro-Lucy Letby.
This is a pro-Letby picture.
It's like Bane from Dark Knight. Yeah.
Genuinely terrifying picture. And it reads, "What is the price of the Nurse Letby witch hunt? £100 million of our money wasted on silencing an NHS whistleblower."
Right.
So not only is she innocent, she blew some sort of whistle now.
This is the first time I've heard of her allegedly being a whistleblower. I never heard any...
First time
well, she kept
as well.
Quiet right. about that till now, it seems like. I mean, I know her defence was that there was some problem with the hospital and that, you know, the drains
the
were messed up. And
oh, she blew the whistle on the plumbing. You think that's what they mean?
But is that wishing for me? She only blew the whistle in her own trial as a very ropey form of defence.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like she was campaigning for this issue to be addressed.
Is true. No, she didn't blow any whistles. These people are all nuts, you know.
It's like a full-blown subculture now, isn't it? Like, I see a lot of this in your X feed because you talk about very little else. But it's like, you know, pictures of them having little... some of them had a birthday party in the pub for Lucy Letby.
Yeah, in January, pub and clap.
Like, did I read something?
They had a cake.
They're having like Letby's dating nights or something like that. I imagine that skews very male.
Is she the sort of Luigi Mangione for these people?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Luigi Mangione was the guy who shot the Hellcat scene.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then loads of people were like, "Oh my God, what a hero." And it's like, he killed a guy. He killed some guy just doing his job.
People thought he was hot. That's the thing.
Exactly.
And also, they hate the Hellcat system.
They thought he was hot. All these women thought he was hot. Then they found out that he's 5'6". And all of a sudden, they're like, their vaginas just snapped shut. And they were like, "Fuck this guy." And they put pictures of Ted Bundy back up.
But that is another connection, isn't it, Chris? The thirst for Letby seems to be a part I'm not talking about anyone in particular.
She's a blonde woman in her 20s. And a lot of these people, as you can see from those photos, are men in the autumn years of their life. So you could say
these are thirsty
men. Hoping, when she comes out, they get a little kiss, maybe.
Yeah. There's something about...
all of their efforts.
Yeah. There's something about serial killers that... I mean, if you look at Ted Bundy and all these people, I mean, it's usually women going crazy for them because they're usually men, but I guess this shows that it's
works both ways.
It works both ways. Yeah. But you think she's guilty. I mean, the trials, the guilty convictions would suggest that she's
there
guilty.
There is a presumption of guilt at this point, I would say. And that's really all I'm going with, other than if someone produces some good evidence showing that she couldn't have done it, then I'll obviously change my mind.
But thing is, a couple of years ago, I'd have been like, yeah, fine. But now I've just seen so many just blatant miscarriages of justice in the criminal justice system. Like Jamie Michael, the guy who was, I mean, he wasn't convicted, but, you know, it just shows how many convictions like that. He's the sort of one who shows the unsafety of so many of these convictions.
What did he do?
He's the one guy.
He
was the one guy.
What did he not do?
He posted a video after Southport in which he was basically saying, it was around the time when, you know, the rumours mill was going around online about it being a Islamist asylum seeker. So he posted a video saying something to the effect of that there are radicalised idiots in those asylum hotels. We need to have a public meeting. You know, and essentially the trial seemed to hinge, or his prosecution seemed to hinge on the idea that even though what he said within it was not anything inciting or particularly hateful, the time in which he posted it made it inflammatory, and therefore it was incitement to racial hatred. But as Leo was mentioning earlier, he was one of the few people to plead not guilty, ends up going to a jury trial, and they acquitted him within minutes.
Yeah,
and he got his
fair enough. But that is still a bit different to being accused of being a serial killer.
But he didn't take the duty solicitor. But again, the state has a huge incentive to find Lucy Letby guilty.
Why?
If you think about it, well, because it's the state that is responsible ultimately. It's a state-run hospital. It's the NHS. So well, that, I mean, if I don't believe that any sort of, you know, we've got a sort of semi-communist system in the UK, a socialist system where we've got this like behemoth, this leviathan, that's the NHS, and everybody, you know, uses it. Well, not everybody, but you know what I mean. It's the sort of the healthcare for everybody. It's got so much power, so much control, and also because it's got this sort of ultimate unaccountability, because it is the state provided state health provider. It doesn't have that level of oversight that you might get in a more competitive market.
That's sort of what these pro-Let Me people say. They say that she was used as a scapegoat to cover up failings in the hospital.
But you're on the side of the nanny state
The problem with the theory is that it was the hospital managers who were bending over backwards to tell everyone a blind eye to Lucy Letby.
Right.
And also, nobody knew about these, apart from the parents and a few staff. No one knew about this spike in deaths at the hospital. It wasn't like it was even regional news, let alone national news. There was nothing to cover up. And now the hospital, as of last week, the hospital is being prosecuted for gross corporate negligence. Mm. So it's not really working as a plan, is it? You know, we'll just put this innocent woman in prison for the rest of her life, and then everyone will forget about it.
Because it was doctors taking it upon themselves to raise the alarm about this.
And I think at one point, managers who said go away.
They forced them to apologise to her. At one point, didn't they? Famously, because they were like, how dare you make these allegations? So, yeah, there's probably it's a kind of anti-Letby, like anti-NHS line one could take.
Is that like somebody from Rotherham Police? just got a new job for this hospital.
Yeah, just say, how dare you?
See, I can't remember if I said this before, but the one of the reasons this basically conspiracy theory is so popular is it crosses party lines. Because for the people on the left, it shows that the NHS is terribly underfunded, right? And this was a failing hospital. It was understaffed, blah, blah, blah. And people on the right, it shows how terrible the NHS is. Just, you know, allows people to be killed by doctors, not by Letby. So it genuinely does cross party lines. And, you know, when I see these pro-Letby people, I look at the bio and it's often quite surprising who they are. Mm. You know, you've got Palestine flags, Corbyn flags, but also, you know, very right-wing stuff, or just nothing
at all.
Yeah, the
Corbynistas got into it as well, didn't they? I saw some Navarro, Owen Jones.
Big time. Well, the protest in Liverpool was organised by some far-left group I'd never even heard of, but they were like kind of stop the war type people.
Palestine Action.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. Very trade union-y, yeah?
There you go.
It's funny with people like that. You can tell whatever cause they're supporting, it's the wrong cause. Some people, you can just take a look at them and you just know.
Exactly. You don't need to know anything else about the Letby case. Just look at who's manning those barricades. Shall we open up the postbag, Chris?
Yeah.
Postbag.
It's bulging, eh?
So we got one here from Sean Walker. Going back to the banter bouncers question. For someone like Leo, which of your jokes would be most likely to see you thrown out of a pub under these banter laws? This could also be career ending.
Podcast
ending too.
No, exactly. I reserve the right to remove it from the.
I got loads of stuff about trans, but I mean, I think I get away with that because I'm a trans woman myself.
Mm.
But I mean, I've got a bit about grooming gangs that would probably, like, you know, it's one of those things I can't always do it in normal clubs. It's the trouble with my stuff when I try and do, you know, my more Leo stuff in normal clubs with an audience who are just there for, you know, a night out and some dick jokes. Like, it doesn't always land. They're like, what's this guy talking about? Also, not everybody knows about the grooming gangs. Yeah, you know, the authorities did a good job of covering it up still. You know, it's crazy. But yeah, my grooming gangs bit is all about how, well, for a start, it's like a weird euphemism, like grooming gangs. It's like, what are they, Cambodian dog shampooers? You know what I mean? It's like, let's see what they actually are. You know what I mean? And then I say, you know, people used to say, you know, they're coming over here, they're taking our jobs, and they'll go into the whole thing about their jobs and, you know, ordering a pizza from Deliveroo and all that. But I say, they're not coming over here, they're taking our jobs. They're coming over here, they're taking our paedophilia. And they're good, honest, hard-working British paedophiles who've, like, invested in fans, invested in chocolates, invested in boxes of puppies, and they're having their God-given right denouncing children taken away by these Johnny-come-latelys. And yeah, that's something.
That's right, we'll
get away with that.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, that's just about on the line. But in terms of other postbag questions, Chris, we've got one about craft beer, which is your bêtement. The worst craft beer I've ever tasted. This is from Mam on X. Was some god awful 15% stout that tasted like an espresso. Minging, what's the worst one you've ever had?
Well, I don't drink them, do I?
You never even once.
Well, I have. Yeah, I've had. Usually, I just smell them. But my colleague Christian Niemitz is drinking them after work.
Oh, he's a big...
He loves it. There's no craft beer too disgusting for him not to drink. He'll drink them all
of
different colours.
The pong of hops and grapefruit follows him around like a cloud.
And I just say, can I have a whiff? And he's got, oh my God, I nearly pass out. It's unbelievable the man can drink that kind of stuff.
They put too much flavour
in
the beers now. Yes. Like they used to
it's one way
like
of
before
it.
They crafted lager, they just made it. And it was much better. It just tasted like lager. And you could drink loads of it and not feel disgusting. Like now it's like each one, it's like eating like three OXO cubes.
Yeah.
It's like just the whiff of like, it's like the mess dots and flowers. Nobody wants that much flavour. You know what I mean?
And then you start describing it like it's a bottle of wine. It's like, this has got hints of blah, blah, blah on summer's day.
Lime and strawberries. Well, I don't want that in a bit.
Yeah.
I just want hops and barley, really.
Is that too much?
So I don't know. I mean, Beaver Town, I'm going to say, because it's the only one I can think of off the top of my head I've actually drunk.
Yeah.
And it's horrible. It's as horrible as the packaging. You can judge, you know, they say you can't judge a book by its cover. You can usually judge a beer by its packaging these days. If it's got lots of colours and looks basically like it's aimed at a six-year-old, it's going to be disgusting craft beer. But fair play to our Twitter correspondent for drinking a 15% one.
Yeah.
That's just wine.
That's worth it, just for the hit.
I did a gig in Eindhoven and they were bringing me, my mate Danny was on, like we're doing a double header, so he was up doing his bit. And they were bringing me these little like wine glasses of beer. And I was like, I don't know why they're bringing it in such tiny glasses. But, you know, I was like knocking them back and they're like shots of beer. And I didn't realise. Yeah, it's like 12% this beer. And I didn't know because I was just watching Danny, so I didn't realise how drunk I'd got until I got on stage and tried talking. And I was absolutely
How did it so taste? Drunk. Did you not notice from the taste? Did not I mean, taste it tasted, like special brewy? Or,
yeah, it tasted kind of special brew. And that's the weird thing. I mean, dating a French lassie who'd lived in Germany, and she got special brew. And I was like, what are you doing? We're not that, you know...
Well, that hard up.
This month, hard up. Why are you getting special brew? But she loved it because it was like this sort of heavy, like European style beer.
That was like a fine imported, you know, like option.
Made for Winston Churchill.
Which is the same way that if you go to America, they think like Stella Artois. They believe those adverts where they're like taking the foam off with a knife, and it's, you know, they think it's like a really fancy continental kind of thing. And you tell them it's what its nickname is in the UK. And
Well, it's still 5.2 in America. See, this is how I suddenly twigged about this reformulation thing making Stella worse. I didn't twig when I was drinking the occasional pint of Stella in Britain going like, I don't like this as much as I used to. Because I used to love it. I drank it all the time at university. Yeah. It was when I went to Washington and it was like the only beer I recognised basically on the tap, which is pretty much my policy, quite conservative when it comes to beer. I'll have a pint of that. Drank it. God, that's absolutely delicious. That's nectar. And then I realised it's unreformulated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's weird because like American beer is usually so weak. Yeah. Like Bud Light. Bud Light was, I know they sort of destroyed their image with Dylan Mulvaney, but to be honest, like that is the beer for a man who thinks he's a woman. It's 3.5%. You know what I mean?
And yet over there, it's kind of like coded towards someone who's like a meathead watching football all day.
Yeah, it's weird, funny
how these. I guess because it's sunny, so you know, you don't want to be drinking. You'll get a headache drinking continental beer in the hot weather
that. It's an admission of being a lightweight, isn't it? It's going like, this is a beer for American men who want to drink it all day watching the football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're lightweights, so we need to drink something that's 2.5%.
Like the old Session Bitter.
Yeah.
There we go.
Session Bitter.
Right, we're almost out of time, but Leo, because we are a very libertarian anti-ban podcast, we do ask our guests.
Well, he's going to have no problem with this.
If they had to have one ban, what would it be? And of course, the only criteria is that it can't be anything too worthy or something that's trying to.
You can go full nanny state if you want.
You are a dictator.
I would ban people at the end of podcasts who say we're almost out of time because there's no time limit. You own this room. We could stay here for hours. I was listening to New Culture Forum, Peter Whittle interviewing, what's his name? David Betts. Really interesting interview about the prospect of civil war in the UK. And like 42 minutes in, Peter Whittle's like, we're almost out of time. And it's like, no, get him to talk for more. What have you only, you can't pay for the professional version of Zoom so you can go beyond the 45-minute mark?
Maybe that's like, it. Or he's getting, they've got a civil war to prepare for. They've got, you know, things to do, places to be.
Yeah, just spill some sandbags.
He wants to go to the toilet, that's all it
means. So what's your ban, Leo?
What would I ban?
Junk food advertising?
No.
People who don't drink
sugar
tap
drinks?
Water.
What would I ban?
You know what? I'd ban people who don't live by the values they espouse. So, you know, like...
Hypocrites.
Yeah, like Gary Lineker, Deborah Meaden, they're all like, oh my God, we should have open borders, guys. Emma Thompson, we should have the open borders. Like, they should be the people... People in Wethersfield, where they're doubling the size of the asylum centre and, you know, it's bigger. There's more asylum seekers now, or illegal migrants, whatever you want to call them, than there are residents in the village. People there can't sell their houses, and it doesn't make any sense to me because all these lefties are like, oh no, it's their greatest strength, it's wonderful, they're all engineers and all the rest of it. So Deborah Meaden, Gary Lineker, all these people should have to buy houses in that village and not live in the leafy suburbs in gated communities and whatever, where they're protected from it. I think, you know, the fact that people can signal one thing and then live a completely different life is the root cause of a lot of these problems.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Last Orders. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you subscribe and click the bell so that you never miss another Spiked video. If you're listening to this on your podcast app, make sure you subscribe there and leave us a glowing 5-star review. And if you'd like to get in touch with your questions or band suggestions, email us at lastorders@spiked-online.com.